on the 130 document, docket. People versus Valenzuela, council are here and prepared to go, I take it? Second case is Perco Fleet Services versus, I believe it's Koenig, but I'm not sure about the pronunciation on that party's name. Are the attorneys here and prepared to proceed?
Yes, we are, Your Honor, and you are pronouncing that correctly.
Thank you very much. Have you had a chance to read the instructions given on oral argument procedures? I think you probably are, counsel.
Yes, sir.
Okay, do you have any questions? Any questions? Okay, how about questions from the second set of counsel?
No questions, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, we'll begin. When you come to the podium, please identify yourself by name and registration number. And also, for everyone in the audience, please turn off your cell phones and pagers so as not to obstruct the oral arguments in this case. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Norman Mueller. I think my registration is 5853. I represent Mr. Carlos Valenzuela, who was convicted of extreme indifference murder and related charges and sentenced to life in prison without parole. The first issue I would like to address is the Batson challenge. The record in this court suffers somewhat from what I will call a perfunctory or ambiguous record. There was one Hispanic, Mr. Valenzuela, as you can tell by his name, is Hispanic. There was only one Hispanic juror on the entire jury panel. That juror was challenged immediately after being questioned at the first opportunity by the district attorney. The defense immediately approached and interposed a Batson challenge. When that challenge was interposed, the court didn't even say anything. Rather, the district attorney, without prompting, listed a couple of reasons purportedly for the basis of that challenge. The court then, after the defense said, well, this juror said he could be fair and impartial, made its ruling and overruled the Batson challenge. As you know from my opening brief, I read that ruling as a ruling on the step one of the Batson challenge, i.e., that the court was ruling that the defendant had not even made out a prima facie case. The Attorney General has responded by saying, no, it's an implicit ruling that there was a prima facie case established by the defense, and instead what it was a ruling on step three of the Batson challenge, that is, that the defense had not borne its burden of proving that there was a discriminatory purpose. We suffer from a perfunctory hearing, no findings of fact, other than basically you overruled defense. If I was correct in my first reading, it's clear that there was a prima facie case. The fact that the only Hispanic juror was challenged by the district attorney clearly makes out a prima facie case, and there's no dispute, I don't think, in the law about that. If we go to the third step of the Batson challenge, the court needs to look at what were the reasons given by the district attorney and whether or not the record clearly refutes those reasons.
Well, if we go to that step, counsel, where the prosecution puts on its reasons and the court makes a ruling, doesn't the prima facie case collapse or go away at that point?
Well, the analysis gets different. The prima facie case is there. It is just step one, which leads you to step two. What the court should have done is said, okay, district attorney, what are your race-neutral explanations? Give me a reason. The defense should have then addressed each of those reasons specifically.
But weren't there reasons provided in this
reasons case? Were provided, and number one, the judge did not credit any of those reasons. The judge made no factual findings on any of those reasons. Secondly, they are refuted by the record. And I deal with that mostly, obviously, in my reply brief, since I was reading the court's ruling as a step one analysis. For instance, the district attorney said, well, this was an incomplete questionnaire. Well, if you look at that juror's questionnaire, it is substantially complete. There are a couple background questions in the first page or two that are not answered, but the district attorney doesn't question about any of those, not one. What the district attorney questions about regarding the questionnaire is instead, you said something about involvement in the criminal justice system by friends and family, and you wrote too many. the juror had answered that question. And the juror repeated that essentially. It's longer than Santa's list. Not one question from the district attorney about what family member, was it here in Weld County? How recently did it involve this district attorney's office? No questions whatsoever about that purported reason. Second example, and that dealt with, by the way, that incorporates two of the district attorney's reasons because he said there was involvement of the family or friends in the criminal justice system and an incomplete questionnaire. That's the only question asked about the questionnaire. It's the only question asked about involvement of friends and family. District attorney said the juror doesn't like the prosecution. There's no basis in the record for that whatsoever. This was a perfunctory two-page questioning by the district attorney. The juror volunteered, put on his questionnaire, that he did not like the trial judge because he thought he had been unfair in an uncle's trial. There are absolutely no questions by the district attorney about what impact, if any, that would have on this particular case, on the ability to be fair or impartial as to either side. And what is interesting here is that this juror was very clear, never expressed a doubt, and was strong about his ability to be fair and impartial to both sides. Finally, the district attorney said,
How can we tell how strong he was, counsel? We just have the black and white words.
Well, Your Honor, this court often relies on the black and white words, and it sometimes relies.
Can you characterize things as strong or weak?
Well, I'm characterizing the words. He never equivocated. He never expressed a doubt. And that's what I'm relying on. And as a matter of fact, it was the defense lawyer who first became concerned, saying, you've got a job. You're a student. You seem to be worried about your ability to be here for 3 weeks, even though he had said, I can be here for 3 weeks. I actually think that was on the jury questionnaire. He answered that question saying, no, that's not a problem. And then the defense lawyer said, well, are you saying that jury service, you can take it or leave it? It's not that important. And he said, no, and I've quoted this in the briefs. No, it's very important. This, whichever way we go, this affects someone's life. I mean, that was a very strong, volunteered answer by this juror. The trial judge made no findings at all as to the validity of any of these reasons. He made a generic ruling saying that there was no discrimination. I read that, in all honesty, as you can see from my opening brief, as, well, this was just a step one finding, which I think is clearly wrong. But if it's step three, this is a case in which I think this court has to do one of two things. This court can remand for a more detailed finding. That's what the remedy is if the court made a clear error of law on step one. But I also think this court has the power, and I can't remember if it happened in Collins or another case, where if the reasons given by the district attorney are not credited by the trial judge and or they are refuted by the trial court record, this court can find reversible error and remand for a new trial. And that's, I think, upon reflection and reading the attorney general's brief, and the argument that the trial court actually made it to step three, if the attorney general is right, and I see why that argument is made, then I think this court can reverse and remand for a new trial because those reasons are refuted by the record, the reasons given by the district attorney.
Were all the reasons given by the district attorney refuted by the record?
Your Honor, as I went through them, the lack of questioning, the lack of pursuing some of these issues, well, there is one that's refuted by the record, doesn't like the prosecution. There's just no evidence of that. The don't like a trial judge, for example, is that statement is in the it's in the record, it's in the questionnaire, but the district attorney didn't pursue that issue at all.
What kind of questions must a district, not should, but must a district attorney pursue to have basically that be a sufficient ground to excuse a juror?
If for, Judge Daly, if for example, a district attorney says, I was concerned that this person's occupation, this person's a nurse, and therefore it's going to be soft on a defendant. I think that there has to, or there's a better example.
But this person said he didn't like the judge. What questions should the DA be asking?
The district attorney, in my opinion, before you can rely upon that to justify an excusal in the face of a Batson challenge, has to have asked at least a question to show the prosecutor's concern. You indicated, Mr. Juror, that you didn't like the judge. What effect will that have on you in this case?
Do you have authority that the prosecutor has to ask a question rather than rely on the jury questionnaire?
Your Honor, several of the cases we've cited, and I'm not going to be able to tell you which one, the courts have cited the district attorney's failure to question on an issue as an indication that it's perhaps a pretextual reasoning.
Didn't he ask one question about this, though?
No.
He didn't ask one question.
I don't think, my recollection, Your Honor, is he didn't pursue that in any way. I think he referred to, it's in two pages, and so it's a very short portion of the record, and I hope my recollection is right. I don't remember that he did. Let me quickly summarize my argument on the first issue, which is the gang evidence. In this case, there was no dispute that there was a gang motivation and that there was gang affiliation. It was addressed by defense counsel in voir dire. Defense counsel in the second or third paragraph of the opening statement said, my client is a member of the Serenos. Not in dispute. This court allowed every bit of gang evidence, irrelevant and prejudicial evidence, to come in. This court, the trial court, used the res gestae exception, which is supposed to be intrinsic to the crime itself. 404B, it addresses those pieces of evidence which are extrinsic, the other bad act, the other crime, the one not involved intrinsically with this offense. This court expanded res gestae to allow all evidence relating to gang affiliation coming into evidence. And I've detailed that evidence. The district attorney started his opening argument very early on, calling about the war that goes on in the streets of Greeley every day. There was only one purpose for this evidence. And the Reyes case, it's a Florida case, but it is very closely on point. It's just like this case, a shooting in a park. There was no dispute that there was gang affiliation. There was no dispute that gang motivation was provided the intent or motive for the prosecutor. But in that case, like in this case, the district attorney was allowed to expand beyond recognition an exception and allow all this evidence into the history of the gangs. In this case, the so-called expert was talking about the relationship and to these gangs, both the Serenos and the Norteños, to the prison gangs. He compared them to Cosa Nostra. And then all of the rap lyrics came in. Nothing to do, many of them dealing with racial intolerance, dealing with sexual intolerance. The jury heard that. The jury read those lyrics. They went back with the jury. This is a case, Your Honor, where the prejudicial value of this led this jury to convict this young man, not based on what he may or may not have done, because that was disputed, but based on the general evils of gangs. And that's why it was reversible error. And it's another reason we should get a new trial.
Was this his own music? Was this the defendant's music that was the lyrics were?
Yes, he had written the lyrics. I would reserve my 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Majid Yazdi, registration number 36043, representing the state in this case. Responding quickly to the comments made by Mr. Mueller regarding the issue of the Batson challenge, it is well established in Colorado that the Batson, the burden to prove prejudicial prejudice by the prosecution's exclusion of a juror is on the defendant. This burden never shifts to the prosecution. And also the cases that I have cited, Robinson and federal case Hernandez, are clear that when the court proceeds to the second step by offering the prosecution the opportunity to cite race-neutral explanations, it is presumed that the court accepted the prima facie evidence of discrimination. So it is clear that what we are dealing here with is the third step of the Batson analysis, not the first step. And the burden of the prosecution in the second step is not significant. All it has to do is to provide explanations that are race neutral. They don't even have to be plausible. Here we have more than plausible explanation. A juror who says that he is against the judge, he dislikes the judge because the judge sentenced and presided over the trial of his uncle, that in itself is sufficient to establish prejudice on the part of the juror, at least, if not for cause, but for peremptory exclusion of the juror. So the record...
You don't think there needs to be another question about what impact would the juror's feelings towards the judge have with respect to the ability to view the case impartially?
No, Your Honor, because it is clear that when there is dislike of the judge, along with the other reasons that was cited by the prosecution, it is sufficient to establish the race-neutral explanation. And there is no authority that the prosecution has to, prior to this exclusion, must have inquired specifically whether that has any effect or not.
What about Mr. Mueller's point that the failure to follow up with the question indicates that the concern was pretextual? The concern about the dislike of the judge.
I don't think that is a proper inference from lack of inquiry on the part of the prosecution, because, again, if you look at the record and all the reasons for not accepting that juror, it is clear the prosecution probably thought there's not any reason to pursue that, because he didn't fill out the questionnaire properly. His answers were, as the prosecution characterized it, flippant. So overall, it was clear to the prosecution that probably this particular juror would not be an appropriate juror for this trial. And there's no need to pursue that line of argument when there is so much that indicates the lack of impartiality of the juror.
What answer or answers indicated a flippant response by that juror?
For example, there's a question of what are, if he has relatives or friends that are involved in the criminal justice system, and he just says, too many to list, rather than explaining what is the nature of the criminal, maybe background of those relatives. And we know that the uncle actually was tried and sentenced by the same judge. So it was lack of openness and providing full information for the prosecution that was sufficient for the prosecution to believe that there's no need to pursue that, because this juror is not really opening up, providing full information. On the question of the gang activity evidence, Mr. Mueller just argued the same issue that was, same argument that was presented at trial, that gang activity evidence should be considered as 404B evidence. Colorado case law is clear that is not the case. Res gestae is the principle that has been applied to evidence related to gang activity in many cases that I have cited in the brief. Martinez, James, Mendoza. So the first issue is, what are the rules of evidence that are applicable here? And there are simply relevance and 403, which is when the probative value is substantially outweighed by the prejudicial effect.
As I understood his argument today, he wasn't necessarily arguing that no piece of gang evidence or gang culture could come in, but that there was so much gang evidence that it was unfairly prejudicial to the defense.
There is reference to 404B evidence, and at the trial level, defense counsel filed a motion, pre-trial motion, requesting the court to consider gang activity as 404B evidence. And that position was rejected by the trial court. There's also a reference in the opening brief that gang activity is clearly equivalent to bad act, again suggesting that this must be treated as 404B evidence. But I agree that there is also an element of having too much evidence. So I will address that. The first issue then is that, is the gang activity relevant? And the question, the case law again is clear that if it is part of the crime, if it helps the jury to understand the circumstances of the crime, it is res gestae evidence.
But at what point? But at what point is the gang on trial as opposed to the defendant?
Your Honor,
in reading the record, it looked to me like we went through the entire history of a gang culture in the city of Greeley, in the prison systems, coming from California. At what point is it, does it become prejudicial and you're actually putting him on trial because of his membership in a gang as opposed to something else?
If there is so much emphasis on the general nature of gang activity without specifically addressing the relevance to the issues raised in the case, then I agree that at that point there is the question of relevance that must be addressed, that whether it relates to an issue. But aside from the general, the jury has to understand the nature of the gang activity, the relationships, the position of the defendant within the hierarchy of the gang, which was important here, that his simple affiliation does not provide the jury with enough information, because affiliation may not mean much to some people, whereas to some others, including the defendant in this case, it meant a lot. He was consumed by gang culture, and all that was relevant to his intent of shooting at the group of people from the rival gang and refuting the claim that he was shooting in the air or away from the crowd. So well,
excuse me, Mr. Nasi, but for example, the information that these gangs originated in California, how was that relevant to anything in this case?
I can't say that it was directly relevant to the issue of the intent, but it just provides some background for the jury to understand the growth of gangs or the activities that were characteristic of those gangs. So I agree that if we look at everything that was said, probably we cannot necessarily relate every piece of information, but obviously there must be some background information for the jury to understand, unless we assume that the jury knows about all these intricacies of gang relationship, which is not a correct assumption. The case of Mendoza, I believe, is very analogous to the present case. In that case, the evidence of gang affiliation, specifically testimony of a police officer, photographs, a notebook containing rap music lyrics, and a drawing of a handgun by the defendant was admitted. And this was considered to be relevant to the intent to kill in that case. And as the court characterized, the evidence was not offered to prove propensity to kill just because of gang affiliation, but specifically because of the attitude toward the rival gang and a particular gang, not just general activity, but towards a particular gang, that made it relevant. And this is exactly what we have here. Mr. Valenzuela's defense was that he did not intend to kill, but the lyrics show how much he hated the Nortenos and how much he thought about killing them, specifically the different methods and descriptions that he provided are all consistent with this intent. So it is directly relevant to the intent to kill and to refute the claim and the defense that he was shooting in the air away from the crowd just to scare them. And this is why this case is distinguishable from Reyes, which Mr. Mueller cites from Florida. And obviously, there is no case in Colorado that can be cited to support the position that Mr. Mueller is advocating, that gang evidence should be, admission of gang evidence should cause for, call for reversal of conviction. We don't have any case in Colorado. And the Reyes case that is cited is readily distinguishable, because in that case, the court said there is no relevance between the gang activity evidence and the issues raised in the case, specifically saying that there was no genuine question as to actions or motivations of each participant. The only question in Reyes before the court was a legal question, which was whether the defendant in that case should be held criminally liable for a shooting that happened by their rival gang and resulted in the murder of a bystander, innocent bystander victim. So that was only a legal issue before the court, and the court considered all the evidence related to gang to be irrelevant because it did not go to the intent or actions at issue. Whereas here, we have the question of intent. The defendant was charged with first-degree murder after deliberation. So intent was an element of the crime to be proven by the prosecution. So the prosecution, it was necessary for the prosecution to prove intent. And to prove intent, the prosecution needed to show that Mr. Valenzuela did not intend to shoot at away from the crowd or in the air, but actually intended to shoot at the group of the Nortenos. And all the evidence was brought in, made that more likely to happen, so it was relevant. Unless the court has any questions, we ask the court to affirm the judgment of conviction.
I'd like to pose a question before we start the clock, if that's all right. Mr. Mueller, I'd like to pose a question before we start the clock.
Okay.
If the division accepts the proposition that a certain amount of gang evidence was necessary to come in to prove motive and intent to kill, as opposed an enmity, anger, hatred, and so forth, assuming that some of it would be required to come in to prove res geste, what is it that you would assert, if we were to accept that proposition, what would you assert kicks this over the top and makes it so that the defendant did not receive a fair trial?
Well, for example, what I can remember...
Start the clock, excuse me, Bailiff.
What I can remember off the top of my head, the fact that the history, which you've already asked about, Judge Terry, which, as the Attorney General candidly conceded, he couldn't determine any relevancy. The lyrics that have to do with sexual acts, the...
Well, let's back up to the history. Why does that kick it over the top? Why is that so...
Well, because, first of all, you have to assume and you have to understand that gang... The courts have recognized that gang evidence is inherently prejudicial. So that's why, when it isn't really relevant to the case, the courts have been very strict about limiting what can come in. So when you start talking about California prison gangs and you start comparing them to Cosa Nostra, which is what this so-called expert did, that is blatantly prejudicial. The fact that this officer said, we have to track these gang members because, in the words of the district attorney's opening argument, we have a war going on in our streets. We track 300 Sureños, but you know what? There are a lot more out there. That is an absolute, not implicit, but explicit plea to the fact that, as you said, Judge Roman, and I think it was, I wish I would have said it, the gang was on trial instead of the defendant. That's what the end of the trial turned into. So those are some of the examples I can think of off the top of my head. Judge Day, let me correct myself. You were right. Here's what the district attorney said in the Batson, in his brief voir dire. He asked the jury, you said something about feelings about the judge. How does that affect your ability to be fair? He said, the juror says, I thought it was an unfair trial because he sentenced my uncle. We don't really know if it was a trial or just a sentencing. How long ago was that? I'm not sure. It was like months or years. It was years. That's it. There was no follow-up, which is my point, that if this was of real concern, the district attorney would have said, well, are you going to penalize me for it? You're going to penalize the defense? Is this not a case for you? Should you be in some other courtroom? That's why it shows it was pretextual. I'm out of time.
But Counselor, wouldn't you agree that that's a race-neutral reason to say, for a juror to say, well, I don't like the judge because he handled my uncle's case and I didn't like the way he handled it and sentenced him,
well,
regardless of race, wouldn't you admit that's a race-neutral?
I agree that that is race-neutral, but remember that in this case, the trial court did not ask for any race-neutral explanations. The district attorney just started talking. There was no hearing, as we would normally think a hearing would be.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the opinion will issue in due course.